You know, it may be hard to believe. It was for me anyway. But this year, 2017, marks the 8th annual Woodstock Book Fest, and they'll be busily igniting the conversation by bringing readers and writers together for a weekend of discussion and celebration. They do so April 27th through the 30th, where they will be hosting classes, panels, keynotes, story slams, parties, and a lot more, all in the wonderful surroundings of Woodstock, New York. Martha Frankel joins us. She is the executive director of the Woodstock Book Fest. Good morning, Martha. How are you?
Hi, cutie. Good.
It's good to have you on the program, as always. And Stephen Cope also joins us. He is a senior scholar in residence at Kripalu and will be part of the spirituality panel at the Woodstock Book Fest on April 29th, one of the many very cool panels, and we'll be talking about that in a moment. So, Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Joe. Great to be here.
Great pleasure to have you on the program. All right, Martha, you up first.
I've changed the name again, but I'm done changing the name.
All right. So, first of all, it was the Woodstock Writers Fest.
First, it was the Woodstock Writers Fest. Then it was the Woodstock Writers Festival. But now I've settled on this, because this is what I really think it is. You know, I always said it wasn't for writers, it was for readers. It's a book fest. It's a celebration of the word. And so we've changed the name and the look, and I'm just thrilled. I'm finally thrilled.
You're fine. It took you 8 years. You're finally thrilled.
Yeah, whatever.
You're a very patient human being.
I kept saying, you know, there's something wrong here, but I'm thrilled now because I feel like we really hit it. Like, this is what it is.
Now, with that said, the mechanics, the structure of the event is basically as it has been.
Yeah.
So people who have come and have loved it and enjoyed it, they will have probably that same experience this year.
Yeah, we start out on Thursday night with this incredible story slam, and we sort of go from there. And on Fridays, we do intensives at private homes in Woodstock, taught by world-class, you know, leaders, Gail Straub, Kim Wozencraft, Kitty Sheehan, Bev
DiNofrio.
Do
people know you're coming, or is it just random houses?
You know, it's crazy. People call me up and say, would you like to do a workshop at my house?
Oh,
and I
okay.
say, let me go look. And I go, and it's the house that you've always passed and said, I wonder who lives in that house. Those are the houses that we do them in.
Okay. So it's not just like random of, you know, hi, we're here for a...
We see nobody's home.
Okay.
So that's Friday. And then from Friday night through Sunday at 4 o'clock, we go, go, go. And you're there this year on Saturday night.
I am.
April 29th with Robert Thurman, in conversation with Robert Thurman. That's incredibly exciting.
Robert Thurman and I have had a very interesting relationship because he is a wonderful guest. He comes on, we're allowed to say that he's Uma Thurman's dad, right?
Yeah, he wrote to me the other day and he said, might need some extra tickets, daughter's birthday.
Oh, okay.
Didn't say a word.
All right.
Just said okay.
There you go.
All right.
Good. So an eminent scholar of Asian and Tibetan history and Buddhist arts and sciences.
He brought Buddhism to America, really. I mean, you know, we could kid around about Uma, blah, blah, blah. But Thurman brought Buddhism to America. He made it mainstream. And he's incredibly funny. That's always the surprise about him, right? I mean, you've interviewed him. He says things that are just so funny and crazy. I love him.
You always can't believe how deep you've gotten into a conversation until you're there, and then, oh, wow, how did that happen? It's just a lovely, always a wonderful, very meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
Has a new book out. It's called Man of Peace. It's the illustrated life story of the Dalai Lama, and we'll be talking about that and, of course, his work as a whole.
And Stephen Tobolowsky, who came... Like 3 years ago, my friend Kitty Sheehan, who's an editor and a writer, called me up and said, this new book by Stephen Tobolowsky, you know who he is. He was Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day, and he's on The Goldbergs, and he's on Californication. People love him. He's a great actor, but he's a writer. And he wrote a book a couple of years ago, and he came. I had no idea what he was going to do. And he got up, and he told a story for an hour. And the audience was so wrapped up in it that when he got to the end and we realized the payoff of it, which was tremendous, the whole place took in that sound that you do when you hear the perfect poem. It was just incredible. And now he has a new book out called Conversations with God, and he's coming to do that again. So, you know, with a new story and a new show, we're just thrilled.
So, gee, Stephen, it seems like there is a lot of spirituality in this event, isn't there?
There's a lot. There's a lot of spirituality going on here. Our panel is entitled the spirituality panel, but I think it pretty much saturates the whole thing, doesn't it?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, but you know, I love Stephen Cope. A few years ago, he came to the festival with his book, The Great Work of Your Life, and we do the spirituality panel first thing on Saturday morning because we feel like it's a great way to start. And Gail Straub runs it. She's a wonderful writer, wonderful facilitator for many, many things. And she said, oh, Stephen Cope, you're going to love him. And, you know, I'm a cynic. It's who I am. And Stephen talked about the great work of your life. And I was in the front row, which is unusual for me. I always sit in the back so I can escape. But I was in the front row and I was sobbing and I was so embarrassed. And when I turned around, the whole room was sobbing with me because this, what you're talking about, the great work of your life, the transforming power of connection, is something that really moves me. But I hadn't thought about a lot until the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's all of a piece. And he's doing it again with Gail and with Joan Borisenko, who is also works in that same vein, right?
Yeah, Joan is, you know, Joan began with Herb Benson, who was, of course, the great relaxation response guy who pretty much puts some scientific legs under meditation and mindfulness at Harvard. And Joan has gone on to become just one of the most important interpreters of integrative medicine. Lovely woman. She has a book entitled It's Not the End of the World. So I think that's the book she's going to talk about. I'm going to talk about my new book, Soul Friends.
Which Soul is Friends. What a great name.
The transforming power of deep human connection. Why is that so hard for many of us to achieve that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I wrote this book because my last book, the one that Martha was talking about, was a really contemporary commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, the great dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. And I had read all the commentaries on that great 2,000-year-old scripture, and it was really about a friendship. It was about the friendship between these two guys. One of them was God. The other one didn't know that. But I noticed that none of the commentaries actually spoke to the power of the friendship in transforming Arjuna. So I got very interested in the question, how does deep human connection and deep friendship really transform us? And I dug really into the work of Heinz Kohut, who was a disciple of Freud's. He was the great head of the Chicago Psychoanalytic Institute. And at a certain point, he split with Freud because, you know, Freud famously said, psychoanalysis is to help relieve the patient of neurotic suffering so that he can return to ordinary suffering. Well, Kohut had...
That's the Jewish...
That's, ordinary,
you know,
suffering.
Just like,
so Kohut had bigger ideas. The idea... He was really interested in optimal living, what in the yoga tradition we call the jiva mukti, or the fully alive human being. So I got interested in the question of how deep friendship and deep connection really promotes a full life of thriving. And when I dug down into Kohut's work, Kohut had come up with 6 different types of friendship or mechanisms that are absolutely required. Kohut believed that in order to live a full life, you have to intentionally create around yourself a surround of deep relationship. And within this surround of relationship, he wanted to see 6 different kinds of friends. The container, that is, the person with whom you feel safely held and soothed. When you're feeling like you're falling apart, who is it that you go to? Whose hug is it that actually puts you back together, safely held and soothed? The second one is twinship. Twinship is basically what we would call bromance or best friends forever or blood brothers. They're these highly charged relationships that we often have beginning in adolescence. But of course, Kohut thought, you continually need to be exploring these deep, extremely aligned, attuned, it's called mental resonance, relationships that are highly charged, sometimes romantic, sometimes not. The third one is adversity. Kohut came to believe that we all actually need an adverse and what he called adversarial narcissistic needs. That is to say, in order to be everything you can be, you need somebody to push against and somebody who pushes back. And that experience of being pushed against and pushed back forces you to pull yourself together, to draw yourself together, and rise up to be more than you thought you could be. The fourth one is mirroring. The idea here is there are parts of ourselves that we will never see without a human mirror, another pair of eyes. Just as there are parts of your body, you'll never see the small of your back without a mirror. Likewise, there are parts of your psyche, there are parts of yourself that without a human mirror, another pair of eyes on you going, wow, look at who you are, we cannot see. So containment, mirroring, adversity, twinship. I've added two more. One is called, I call mystic resonance. And this is the idea that there are people out there in the world, in the universe, who may be dead, with whom you profoundly connect. So for me, it was Beethoven. I'm a pianist. And from the beginning, my piano teacher said, you have some special connection with this guy. What is it? Beethoven, when he was looking around for his mystic resonance, his mystic connection, discovered Bach. And so that's the fifth one. And then the sixth one is what I call conscious partnership. Could be a marriage. Could be like I live with my best friend, Susie, and we have a conscious agreement to support one another in thriving in every way.
So what is the timeline in all of this? In the sense of, do we look at it as if we take a cross-section of our soul and we look at it, and is it from the time we are born to the time we die, or should we have all of those components at any given time in our lives?
There are certain, there are some of those mechanisms, if you will, that we especially need when we're younger, like containment.
Sure.
The baby needs to be held and soothed and to feel safe. Kohut felt that in order to be a fully alive human being, you mostly need most of them all the time, throughout the entire life cycle. So his view of where he split with Freud was, Freud, of course, thought we were a certain, to a certain extent, in bondage to our early relationships, and those may have lacunae or failings, and that we're in bondage to those. Kohut said, no, you can reinvent yourself, and the way you reinvent yourself is through these deep connections. Basically, he was way ahead of his time because he realized that the self is actually profoundly socially and interpersonally constructed. So I have a deep relationship with you, Martha, and over a period of time, our minds develop this kind of resonance and attunement, and it changes us. We become different. You with Steve, your hubby or your partner. Over time, that deep connectedness actually changes us. So we have to be, you know, Winston Churchill said, we build our buildings and then they build us. And in friendship, we choose our friends and then they have enormous impact on co-creating who we become.
So do we have to, if we have someone who is filling one of those mechanisms, as you say, and they pass or they leave us or something, are they still with us? Do they still provide that?
Joe and I miss our mommies.
That opportunity, yeah. or do you hold auditions and find somebody new?
Both. Okay. So the cool thing is nature has provided us with something called evocative memory.
Yeah.
Which means that, for example, my grandmother, my sweet grandmother, was my container.
Yeah.
And when I feel like I'm falling apart, the very first thing I do is I curl up in a ball and I remember my grandmother's arms around me. We can recall, by the age of three or so, we have this capacity for evocative memory. We can recall the smells, the feel, the touch.
Right.
And I remember once I was lost and almost dying on the Atacama Desert in South America. I was with some buddies, but I was having an asthma attack. The very first thing I thought of was my grandmother's arms around me, evocative memory. At the same time, in order to have a really robust self, it's good to be, I mean, the whole world, we're constantly surrounded by people who can play these roles for us. And what I say in the book is, it helps if we're aware of what these different mechanisms and roles are, and we're doing them consciously. like I mentioned, my friend Susie, I now know Susie's my container. Susie's the container for a lot of people. I'll bring her to the book fest, good, Martha, and you'll meet her. But she's a container. That's what she does. She loves to hold and soothe and cook and create a nest. And, you know, we all have people like that, that we could actually, we could plumb the depths of that experience.
So is it an innate in the sense that we seek this out and we look for it perhaps unconsciously, and you are calling on us to look at it consciously and to put a label on it so we're more aware of it.
Exactly. It is innate. We seek these people out. For example, twinships, best friends.
Yes.
Who knows why all of a sudden Martha comes into my sphere and I'm attuning to you. I'm like, I love this. Who is this woman? I want to get to know this woman.
And love him or what?
Yes. Well, and, it's not to love.
Yeah. And then as a surprise, she's interested in me too. So you're interested in me. I'm interested in you. This creates this amazing chemistry. And all of a sudden you have this magic called twinship. When we're doing that, and it feels a little bit like falling in love, and maybe it is falling in love, when this is happening, we're extra alive. You know,
right,
that experience.
Right.
Everything looks, the trees look greener.
Well, you know, I love when people say, oh, I married my best friend. And I always go, what? I didn't marry my best friend.
Well, what about the crap? So what about...
Here's Joe Donahue.
What about the petty fights, the stupid things that happen in our lives, the perceived slight and all of that nonsense that buries us into personal relationships?
Yeah.
Is that just part of the cost of doing business?
It is. And here's why. Because, for example, in these twinship relationships, you know, I love, we call them best friends forever and romance. It's an experience of joining, and there's a certain amount of merger and joining. And when that kind of merger happens, it's risky. So there's the risk of betrayal. There's the risk of separation or empathic break. And so as a result, we need to learn how to manage the intensity and the riskiness of actually making ourselves vulnerable. I mean, you need to learn how to manage conflict. You need to learn how to manage empathic breaks. If we're in a real twinship situation, then we also are constantly tracking. Like, I'm in a relationship with Martha. I'm constantly tracking. Where's Martha today? Martha,
I know, it's
text
so
me.
Fraught.
What,
right,
what are you doing
fraught
today? Are you there?
Right.
You know, or are you, it's like, are you with me or not? So with the people,
good
like
luck figuring out where Martha is.
With the people that we're super close to, like I have a best friend, Brian. We talk every day. This is called tracking. It's like, Brian,
right,
how are you?
Right.
What's going on today? Are you still there? Are you still with me?
Yeah.
And you know, you can, you know, I just did this last night. I said something to a friend, to one of my best friends, as a joke, but as soon as I texted it, I knew that it was going to hurt her, and I couldn't take it back quick enough. I mean, I was like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. And it resonated with me all night. I was so uncomfortable that I would
there
do that to somebody
go
I love. You know, so to walk around in the world, it's really fraught with so much stuff. We have to be mindful in a way that I'm not used to. I'll say
and
that
you know
nicely
what? We're going to talk in our panel about resilience, and Joan is an expert on resilience. But, of course, all of this surround of relationship gives us more resilience, but we need it because if you're going to take the risk to be in love with Martha, there are going to be some bumps in the road, right?
The name of the book is Soul Friends, The Transforming Power of Deep Human Connection. Stephen Cope will be part of the spirituality panel at the Woodstock Book Fest on April 29th, and just one of many panels.
Yeah, one of nine, three and four is seven, and you and Stephen Tobolowsky and the Story Slam. So one of 11 events or something.
A lot of events. So now, do I come to just one? Do I come to as many as I want?
Whatever
How does
you
that
want
work?
Whatever you want. You can buy a full festival pass and come to everything, or you can go to individual events. We're doing a big addiction and recovery panel with three writers who are addicted to things that, you know, are not necessarily drugs and alcohol, or those, a couple of them are. And we're doing a big panel about that. We have a biography panel. I run the memoir panel with Elizabeth Lesser, Stefan Gerson, Danny Shapiro will be there. Really excited about that.
Three
of the greatest memoirs of our time. I know, I'm so excited. And on Saturday, we have the addiction panel. We have a music panel with Tony Fletcher and Jonathan Gould, run by WDST's Jimmy Buff. Just all day Saturday is going to be great. A fiction panel with some great writers. And so like that.
It's all
fun. And then
fun.
You, Saturday night.
There you go. It's all fun when it comes together, isn't it?
Yeah. It's fun right now. I'm having a great time.
Okay.
I look a little frazzled because...
Well, you're putting on a festival, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm just so excited. I feel like, yeah, we hit our stride. I know what I'm doing now. The look is great. Everybody around me knows what they're doing. We're not tripping over each other anymore. So that's good.
Very fun. All of this, have you taken part in...
I have. I've been on the spirituality panel a number of times. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Wonderful. So you can find out more information by going to WoodstockBookFest.com. WoodstockBookFest.com. The festival runs April 27th through the 30th in Woodstock, New York. Hard to believe it's the 8th annual, but it is the 8th time they've been doing this. And WoodstockBookFest.com to find out all of the information about not just Stephen's panel, but all of the panels and all of the events taking place over the weekend. Martha, Stephen, I thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Great pleasure to have you here. Have a beautiful weekend on the 27th through the 30th, and I'll see you down there.
We'll look forward to seeing you there.
Excellent.
The
Joe
Donahue interview.
Yeah. WoodstockBookFest.com for more information. You can also find information on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, which will be associated with this interview when it is posted on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.